Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. As you and I get ready to observe Memorial Day, I always tell the story of the four chaplains. Remember, we're not celebrating Memorial Day. Memorial Day is about those who have fallen, those who have given their lives in the service of our nation. The story of the four chaplains is important to me because as a child, my father was honored at the Chapel of the Four Chaplains in Philadelphia. At the time, it was located in North Philadelphia. Now it's located in the Navy Yard in Philadelphia. See, my father worked for the federal government. And one day, as he came home, he saw a fire on the big street near our house. It was a shopping area. And my father ran into the building and up the steps before the fire department had arrived. And he rescued an elderly woman. And he carried her down the steps. And he was getting ready to walk back inside and run up the steps again when the Philadelphia Fire Department showed up and said, "Thank you very much for your help. We've got it from here." Well, a couple of weeks later, this large envelope arrived from the White House. My father had been saluted by the President of the United States, and there was this amazing letter and certificate heralding his heroism. And then he was invited to the Chapel of the Four Chaplains. Every year, the Chapel of the Four Chaplains honors people who have performed an act which is evocative of the memory of the four chaplains. Well, my father was honored for running into that burning building, but here's what makes it so special. My brother and I knew it was important because my folks took us out and bought us suits. And I remember pulling at the shirt and the tie and thinking, "Oh, this is scratchy, and why do we have to be so dressed up and all the rest of it?" But we went to the Chapel of the Four Chaplains, and all sorts of amazing people were honored. And then it was time for my father. And the chapel itself had these different altars, and so they changed to reflect the religion of the person being honored. So the altar now takes on the appearance of a Jewish bima, and they're talking about my father, and they're talking about Harold Katz and how he had run into this burning building and he had saved this woman and he was saluted by the president. And they said, "But it's not the first time that Harold did something courageous." And my ears sort of perked up because they said, "You know, there was a time when Harold had joined the army and he had been deployed to Korea. Harold left Philadelphia with 20/20 vision and a beautiful smile." And I thought to myself, what an odd thing to say. And then they told the story of how my father, a military policeman at the time in Korea, had been in a Jeep that was hit and began to tumble basically down a mountainside. And the crossbar, if you've ever seen MASH, the old style crossbar that held the windshield in place, that came loose. And it went through one of my father's jaws and came out the other one. It blinded him in one eye and cost him every tooth in his mouth. That's what they told us. And then I realized, oh, well, that's why they're talking about how he left with 20/20 vision and a perfect smile. After the ceremony, I approached my dad and said, "Wow, you know, that was cool." I probably said it was cool. And he just sort of looked at me. I said, "How come you've never told me that story before?" And he said, "Because there are some things you do simply because they're right. You're not looking for a trophy or a certificate or an award. You simply do the right things for the right reasons." To me, that's what heroism is truly all about. That's what courage and bravery are truly all about. And that's clearly the spirit that the four chaplains embodied. And now let me share with you the story of those four chaplains. It was the evening of February the 2nd, 1943, and the USA transport ship Dorchester was crowded to capacity, carrying 902 servicemen, merchant seamen, and civilian workers. Once a luxury coastal liner, the 5,649-ton vessel had been converted into an Army transport ship. The Dorchester, one of three ships in the SG-19 convoy, was moving steadily across the icy waters from Newfoundland towards an American base in Greenland. SG-19 was escorted by Coast Guard cutters Tampa, Escanaba, and Comanche. Hans J. Danielson, the ship's captain, was concerned and cautious. Earlier, the Tampa had detected a submarine with its sonar. Danielson knew he was in dangerous waters even before he got the alarming information. German U-boats were constantly prowling these vital sea lanes, and several ships had already been blasted and sunk. The Dorchester was now only 150 miles from its destination, but the captain ordered the men to sleep in their clothing and keep life jackets on. Many soldiers sleeping deep in the ship's hold disregarded the order because of the engine's heat. Others ignored it because the life jackets were uncomfortable. On February the 3rd, at 12:55 a.m., a periscope broke the chilly Atlantic waters. Through the crosshairs, an officer aboard the German submarine U-223 spotted the Dorchester. The U-223 approached the convoy on the surface, and after identifying and targeting the ship, he gave the orders to fire the torpedoes. A fan of three were fired. The one that hit was decisive and deadly, striking the starboard side amidship, far below the waterline. Captain Danielson, alerted that the Dorchester was taking water rapidly and sinking, gave the order to abandon ship. In less than 20 minutes, the Dorchester would slip beneath the Atlantic's icy waters. Tragically, the hit had knocked out power and radio contact with the three escort ships. The Coast Guard cutter Comanche, however, saw the flash of the explosion. It responded and then rescued 97 survivors. The Coast Guard cutter Escanaba circled the Dorchester, rescuing an additional 132 survivors. The third cutter, the Coast Guard cutter Tampa, continued on, escorting the remaining two ships. Aboard the Dorchester, panic and chaos had set in. The blast had killed scores of men, and many more were seriously wounded. Others, stunned by the explosion, were groping in the darkness. Those sleeping without clothing rushed topside, where they were confronted first by a blast of icy Arctic air, and then by the knowledge that death awaited. Men jumped from the ship into lifeboats, overcrowding them to the point of capsizing, according to eyewitnesses. Other rafts, tossed into the Atlantic, drifted away before the soldiers could get in them. Through the pandemonium, according to those present, four Army chaplains brought hope in despair and light in darkness. Those chaplains were Lieutenant George L. Fox, Methodist, Lieutenant Alexander D. Good, Jewish, Lieutenant John P. Washington, Roman Catholic, and Lieutenant Clark V. Poling, Dutch Reformed. Quickly and quietly, the four chaplains spread out among the soldiers. There, they tried to calm the frightened, tend to the wounded, and guide the disoriented toward safety. Witnesses of that terrible night remember hearing the four men offer prayers for the dying and encouragement for those who would live, says Wyatt R. Fox, the son of Reverend Fox. One witness, Private William B. Bednar, found himself floating in oil-smeared water, surrounded by dead bodies and debris. "I could hear men crying, pleading, praying," Bednar recalls. "I could also hear the chaplains preaching courage. Their voices were the only things that kept me going." Another sailor, Petty Officer John J. Mahoney, tried to re-enter his cabin, but Rabbi Good stopped him. Mahoney, concerned about the cold Arctic air, explained that he had forgotten his gloves. "Never mind," Good said. "I have two pairs." The rabbi then gave the petty officer his own gloves. In retrospect, Mahoney realized that Rabbi Good was not conveniently carrying two pairs of gloves and that the rabbi had decided he would not be leaving the Dorchester. By this time, most of the men were topside, and the chaplains opened a storage locker and began distributing life jackets. It was then that engineer Grady Clark witnessed an astonishing sight. When there were no more life jackets in the storage room, the chaplains removed theirs and gave them to four frightened young men. "It was the finest thing I have seen or hope to see this side of heaven," said John Ladd, another survivor who saw the chaplain's selfless act. Ladd's response is understandable. The altruistic action of the four chaplains constitutes one of the purest spiritual and ethical acts a person can make. When giving their life jackets, Rabbi Good did not call out for a Jew. Father Washington did not call out for a Catholic, nor did the Reverends Fox and Poling call out for a Protestant. They simply gave their life jackets to the next man in line. As the ship went down, survivors in nearby rafts could see the four chaplains, arms linked and braced against the slanting deck. Their voices could also be heard offering prayers. Of the 902 men aboard the United States Army transport ship Dorchester, 672 died, leaving 230 survivors. When the news reached American shores, the nation was stunned by the magnitude of the tragedy and the heroic conduct of the four chaplains. "Valor is a gift," Carl Sandburg once said. "Those having it never know for sure whether they will have it until the test comes." That night, Reverend Fox, Rabbi Good, Reverend Poling, and Father Washington passed life's ultimate test. In doing so, they became an enduring example of extraordinary faith, courage, and selflessness. The Distinguished Service Cross and Purple Heart were awarded posthumously on December the 19th, 1944, to the next of kin by Lieutenant General Brehon B. Somerville, Commanding General of the Army Service Forces, in a ceremony at the Post Chapel at Fort Myer, Virginia. A one-time-only, posthumous, Special Medal for Heroism was authorized by Congress and awarded by President Eisenhower on January the 18th, 1961. Congress attempted to confer the Medal of Honor, but was blocked by the stringent requirements that required heroism be performed under fire. The Special Medal was intended to have the same weight and importance as the Medal of Honor. I have told this story on the air for years because I think it absolutely symbolizes what is right with America. This is American exceptionalism. This is courage and bravery and heroism. It's selflessness of the highest degree. And I don't know about you, I try to live my life each and every day remembering the sacrifices that so many have made for me and my family, my children who they've never met. And I hope against hope that if I'm ever given the opportunity, if I ever face that sort of challenge, I hope I'll be able to live up to the spirit of those four chaplains. We acknowledge everyone who has given their life in service to others. Celebrate. Memorial Day? No. We observe it. We commemorate sacrifices on Memorial Day. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.